Good morning, Halaman Church. My name is Trent Robinson, and I'm one of the leaders here. And this morning, I get the privilege, as I do every once in a while, to lose my voice. No, to open the Word with you guys and to get to study what God has for us as we continue in a series through Ecclesiastes. So, in high school, I went on a cruise with my family. And on cruises, I love cruises. On cruises, there's so many things you can do, right? You can go to the pool deck and you can swim. You can eat endless food. You can go out to the ports and you can see different places. You can come back on the cruise and eat endless food. You can do activities and events. You can eat endless food. If you can tell what my favorite part of a cruise is, it's the endless food. But one evening on the cruise, we decided to go to karaoke night. Mainly for observation, if you've ever heard either my parents or I sing, mainly for observation. I just couldn't imagine Brian up there singing Mariah Carey, My Heart Will Go On. You know, it's just not hard image for me. And as we're observing, as we're watching, we're getting to see people go up there, there are these three guys that drive me insane. So how it works is that they go up there, they sing, they don't sound great, they're kind of just having a good time. It's probably, you know, late college, early young adult age, probably a little tipsy, they're on a cruise, and these guys, man, they just keep going up there. And so they finish their song and they go back around, they cycle and they sign up for the next song. And so I've seen them probably three or four times and I'm losing my mind because I'm like, these guys just want the attention. Okay, that's my rant. And then the MC, who's calling people up, calls this little kid up, and he's like, all right, Timmy, it's your turn. And he says, I hope tonight goes better than last night. This time you're going to stay up here, right? I'm like, oh, my word. And what I pieced together is that apparently the night before he had been there, he had done karaoke, but halfway through the song, he just sprinted out because he was so nervous. Poor little kid, right? And so I'm over here, like, rooting for this kid. I'm rooting against these three guys. And the song Payphone by Maroon 5 starts, and this kid is stiff, and he's got that nervous glance. And then the song starts, and he's like, time, paralyzed, love. And it's that nervous where he's, like, speaking one word out of every sentence. And these three guys, the pain of my existence, stand up. And they start walking towards the front, and I'm thinking, my blood is boiling, I'm thinking, these guys are going to go up on that stage and steal that kid's moment. And I am getting angry as I'm sitting there. And to my surprise, these three guys, they walk down the aisle. If that's the stage in front of me, they walk down the aisle, they stop in front of the stage, and they start doing this. They're hyping this kid up. I thought they were coming to steal this kid's moment, and instead, they are hyping him up. And to my surprise, about 30 seconds later, I am up there with them, along with 10 other people. And we have this mosh pit in front of the stage, and we're like, and then the rap comes on, and this payphone song, the rap comes on. He has no clue what the words are, obviously. He's not going to keep up with it. And so all of us just go, go Timmy, go Timmy, go Timmy. And we're just, he gains this confidence. I mean, he has this smile. He is actually trying, and he's enjoying what he's doing. And these three guys paved the way for it. I mean, I look at that moment, and it's hard for you to tell me that community does not matter, that it does not play an impact in the way that we live our lives. And so today, we're going to be talking through Ecclesiastes. We are going to continue in this series. And so we're going to be in Ecclesiastes 4, which focuses a lot on community in a world of Hevel. And Hevel is what we've talked about before. It's this meaningless, temporary, unpredictable, uncontrollable world that we live in. It's vapor or breath, something that we can never actually get a hold of, hence its temporary nature. And so we're going to talk about community. What purpose does it serve? How does it motivate us? How does it deter us? How does it encourage us? And so Solomon, this man that prayed to God for wisdom and received it, is about to bring some wisdom for us through communal lessons. So all of these lessons that he has given us up to this point are not forgotten. The world is still Hevel. Pretty much everything that we do under the sun is futile and a chasing after the wind. It's all temporary. We can't live for the next thing. because that next thing will eventually disappear and it will leave you empty the same way. So how do we see community? Well, big idea, we were formed for fellowship under the sun. Very simple, we were formed for fellowship under the sun. And so Solomon starts this chapter of Ecclesiastes 4 on a very depressing note. I'm just gonna put that out there. He does not start all happy and cheery. This is pretty depressing. The end of chapter 3 that Corey covered last week ends with this idea of justice and how our best attempts to achieve justice pretty much still fall short. And so now he continues that justice talk into a really fun topic of oppression. And so he starts by saying this, "Again, I observed all the acts of oppression being done under the sun. Look at the tears of those who are oppressed. They have no one to comfort them. Power is with those that oppress them. They have no one to comfort them. So I commended the dead who have already died more than the living who are still alive. But better than either of them is the one who has not yet existed, who has not yet seen the evil activity that is done under the sun." So he starts in verse 1 by examining the painful and tragic lives of the oppressed. And I don't really have to prove this very hard. I'm not going to spend much time on it. In fact, I'm going to run through it. Oppression is everywhere. It's everywhere. And this is a list I got from Enduring Word Commentary. And it's set for the time frame that the audience would be, that Solomon is writing for. But oppression of a people by their king, oppression of a servant by his master. We got the poor by the rich, the poor by a government or corporation. We've got the poor by other poor people. We've got oppression of the alien, the fatherless, the widow. We have oppression of the people by charging high interest. We have oppression of the people by false weights and measurements, these unachievable standards. Oppression is everywhere, and it looks very different in all these different circumstances, but it is rampant. There will always be those that take advantage and those that are taken advantage of. And it's a horrible reality. So what? Just asking the honest question, so what? How do we handle that? What he's saying in his context is under the sun. And Corey highlighted this last week, and I'm so happy she did. I was taught in middle, high school, college, that if it's repeated, it's important. Yeah, if it's repeated, it's important. And he repeats this phrase time and time again. So everything under the sun, everything below heaven, amounts to nothing. In essence, apart from God, our lives lack actual value, meaning, and purpose. And so when we talk about oppression, it comes to this. In a world under the sun, where this life is all there is. That's what it's saying. Under the sun, this life is all there is. Men and women will give no account for their lives in a world to come. And that means that the oppressors are never called to account. They never have to own up for what they have done. There is no justice in that. Then the suffering and pain that those oppressed receive will never be redeemed. They suffer for no point. That's this life under the sun. Void of God, life becomes meaningless. And I see it now, Solomon, I see it. See, verse 3 mentions that oppression and hopelessness are so bad in this world under the sun that the best scenario for us would be to never be born. That's how bad he's saying. He's like, better yet, don't be born. To never have to witness and experience this evil personally. But God. And yes, I'm in the middle of my message, but God, I have to do it. God makes it so that the world does not just amount to being under the sun. There is justice at his hand. The oppressors will answer both in this life and in the life to come. But God. Isaiah 49, 25 through 26 talks about this God coming. And he says, and I love this, but this is what the Lord says. Yes, captives will be taken from warriors and plunder retrieved from the fierce. I will contend with those that contend with you, and your children I will save. Here we go. I will make your oppressors eat their own flesh. And I'm like, well, that's violent. He will make the oppressors eat their own flesh. They will be called to account. They will be drunk on their own blood as with wine. Then all mankind will know that I, the Lord, am your Savior, your Redeemer, the Mighty One of Jacob. This is the Lord speaking security over his people Israel. He promises that he will protect and he will redeem their pain and injustice. And so being on the other side of time, being New Testament, that was Old Testament, we actually have seen one of this already come true, because when he sent Jesus, he gave us that security, that we can be hidden with him, that we can have hope with him, that actually there is access to him. And so this life does not end at physical death. Oppressors will be held accountable for their actions. See, God's wrath, make no mistake, guys, we focus on sometimes God's love and mercy and grace. God's wrath will always be and has always been on sin. It will always be. But when Jesus came, he gave us access for his righteousness, his goodness, to be the case that I will claim before the throne. It's not my works, but Christ. We have hope. So I want to meet that oppression and hopelessness with this reality. We have hope, guys. Those of us that know God. And so let me rewrite the statement I said earlier. In a world under heaven, where heaven and hell are a very real reality, where this life is not all there is, men and women will give an account of their lives before God. And thank the Lord, I can claim Jesus. We were formed for fellowship under the sun. We were formed for fellowship under the sun. And so now Solomon shifts from this oppression talk to kind of talk about more about the motivations of the heart in community. And he says, I saw that all labor and all skillful work is due to one person's jealousy of another. This too is futile in a pursuit of the wind. What you do is a result of what you see around you. That's what Solomon's saying. He's saying that all of our labor and our skillful work is a result of jealousy and envy. So either it would be jealousy of our neighbor, or jealousy, we want jealousy from our neighbor. That's what he's saying. And so in essence, let me give an example. He's saying that the clothes you wore today are not because you needed to wear those specific clothes, but it's because you wanted to be seen in them. And then it becomes more real, right? Like, I was like, yeah, that's true, right? Like, I didn't show up in sweatpants and that just because, you know, I want to be seen in decent clothes. That's why, and it depends on your sense of style, right? Because however you would dress would dictate how people see you. I mean, if you dress like a farmer, then you want to be seen like a farmer. If you dress, it works that way. Or you could say the car that you drive. You drive it because you want to be seen in that car. Or the way you maintain your lawn, or the house that you have. It's because you want to be seen in that. So that's what Solomon is saying here. He's saying that at the center of our hearts is a desire to be noticed and gain attention. And so think of it even larger scale, right? That's why we have pop culture. It's why things are popular. It's because we want to attain something that others want. And so Solomon, here's what he wants. He wants to know how we can live in a life full of pain and oppression and no one having genuine concern for another. Everyone just wants to stand in the center of their own universe. Because as Solomon looks at this, he is like, man, what a bad reality. And so he gives two responses that the world often kind of responds to this prompt, right, of jealousy, of everything being motivated by this envy. The two responses that Solomon sees and observes is this. The fool folds his arms and consumes his own flesh. Better one handful with rest than two handfuls with effort and a pursuit of the wind. So first option, we give up. We just sit there and, as he said, consume our own flesh. Basically, we just sit there and we give up. We live lazy. We don't even try community. What's the point of it, right? And so we just fold our arms and wither away in isolation. Number two, again, I saw futility under the sun. There is a person without a companion, without even a son or a brother. And though there is no end to all his struggles, his eyes are not content with his riches. Who am I struggling for, he asks, and depriving myself of good things? This too is futile and a miserable task. So if our first option is give up, our second option, put on blinders. We just bury ourselves in the work or fitness or video games or anything so we do not have to look at the fallenness of the world, so we do not have to get into the muck of the world. We just bury ourselves. Solomon asks, there has to be a better way, right? There has to be something better than this, giving up or putting on blinders. That both of those are such sad realities. So where is the hope? And then this next passage I'm going to read is actually one of the more popular ones. You've probably heard it before, and it's a positive one. It's more upbeat. He says, there has to be a better way, right? Two are better than one because they have good rewards for their efforts. For if either falls, his companion can lift him up, but pity the one who falls without another to lift him up. And if two lie down together, they can keep warm, but how can one person keep warm alone? And if someone overpowers one person, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. Really easy point. We need each other. And you say, well, maybe that's true, and I was saying that even as writing that, I was like, should I put like some kind of disclaimer? Like, we need each other except for when people are horrible or people betray me. Or should I put some kind of disclaimer? Like, actually, it's more like we kind of need each other. But the more I thought through it, we really need each other desperately. What did Jesus do when he first started his ministry? Anyway, what did Jesus do when he first started his ministry? Yeah. He got his disciples. He invited people to do the walk of ministry with him, to do life with him. Community is not just a thing that exists in case we want it one day. It's a thing that exists because we need it. I'll prove it. Prove it with a really silly example. How many of you guys just love moving houses or apartments? It's super fun. You love packing up all of your stuff, putting it in these boxes, putting it in a truck, driving across the city, the state, the country, out of the United States. You love doing that. And then you love getting to the new place, unpacking all this stuff, trying to figure out where in the world it goes, not having this, not having that. You don't even know where this thing is. Yes, I moved recently. How many of you guys love moving? Oh, really? You know, I'd love it a lot more if I didn't have to do any of that work, because then I just get to figure out, you know, like where things go. I hate moving. I do. And I don't think many people love that process. Maybe it's fun to see the new spot or the new state, new wherever, new house. But I don't like moving. I was a part of a team in college. We were called Team Doug because there wasn't a better spot. Our leader was Doug Damon. And so for 2 years I worked under him, and then 2 years I got to work beside him. And he works with a team of 24 young men. Him and his partner, and I got to do that for 2 years in that role. And there's one thing that Doug, as a father of 4 sons, as a ministry leader of 24 guys, there's some different like wisdom sayings that he has adopted, and he called them Damonisms. And so his guys would know him, his sons would know him. They're just little wisdom sayings. So I'll give one that's not the one I'm using today. It's impossible to be bent out of shape if you're flexible. So he was training his men to be flexible, right? Well, one of them is see the need, meet the need. So if you are able and you have the ability to, and you see something, you're aware of it, then why would you not go serve and help somebody? That's the essence of it, right? And so Doug would constantly get asked by people, maybe in the school, out of the school, hey, do you know anybody that could maybe help us move? And he would put out the request for all 24 of us guys. And every once in a while, we would like hop on it. And so I remember a couple different Saturdays, I would give my Saturday morning or afternoon to help move all this furniture, all this stuff into a moving truck. And so we'd show up with like 6 guys and many hands made light work, right? And so we could actually do something that would take them a full day or more. And we would make it into an afternoon. Where we got to serve these people, and we would always get this immense gratitude back because moving is horrible. It is. And so that community that could show up and help meet a very physical, very basic need matters. We need each other. And I want to give a couple examples of how we need each other. So first, it's in this term, accountability. We need each other, a person or people to hold you to a standard. And the standard could be the standard of holiness that Jesus has called you to. And I hope that's the umbrella scope of anything, right? That these people would actually hold you accountable to walk like Jesus. And so if you are walking very much not like Jesus, somebody would call you out. Like if I am being angry and I'm screaming at people, then I hope one of my friends would come over to me and say, you're in the wrong. I hope they would. It could be of effort. It could be something similar like just, I want to go to the gym 4 days a week. And so then my friend says, okay, text me when you go to the gym. And at the end of the week, he says, you only did three. What's up? It could be of sobriety. It could be serious things. But accountability matters. Others can help keep us on track. That's why we don't run from them. We run to them. I might be stuck. Okay, I'm going to continue. Of prayer. prayer is the next one. We need each other, prayer. Sometimes when times get hard, we need somebody to pray for. We need somebody to grieve with. We need somebody to encourage. A question I like to ask in college, I got the privilege of doing a position where I would hire these volunteer small group leaders. And so I would serve over them, and I would basically encourage them. It would be this relationship between us. And so we would interview people for this position. And in interviewing them, I would ask this one question, and it sounds ridiculous, so let me explain it before you judge me. What is your holy injustice? Holy injustice. What it means is that there is something that you see wrong in the world that you specifically feel in your spirit that you have been called to help fix it. That you feel stirred in your spirit to make a difference in that area. And so, for me, the one I always gave them, because I always gave them an example because it's a ridiculous question if you don't have an example or a framework for it. I really hate seeing people hurt alone. I hate seeing people hurt alone. And so when I was on campus and I would have a hall of 70 guys, when I was hiring these small group leaders, I was making sure that I hired people that were diverse enough that no one would fall through the cracks. That these men that I hired would make sure that everyone was known and seen, and somebody on that hall that is struggling and hurting would feel at least comfortable with one guy that was on my team. And now I'm in ministry for that same reason, because I don't like when people hurt alone. And so I mean it, let me step out of preaching for a moment to now shepherding. I mean it whenever I say, please let me in on what is going on in your life. Like, I mean it. It is my joy, privilege, and honor to pray for you, to sit in silence with you, to just listen to you. That is my heartbeat. That's why I'm here. That's what I want to leverage my life for. And now that I said that, I need to say the other half of it. You don't just have to talk to the pastor either. Every single one of you is empowered to love and grieve with and encourage every single one of you. We don't walk through this alone, and we're not a pastor-centered church either. Community matters. You guys are empowered to do the same. Physical needs. That's another thing. Physical needs matter. From survival to service, people are important in life. See, Solomon mentioned that one person alone cannot keep warm. And emperor penguins know this by instinct, as you see on the picture. See, they huddle together, and the adults surround to act like a shield so that they can keep warm in the icy chills. So our physical needs can be anywhere from surviving the icy chill to having help moving houses. It could be bringing someone food on a random day just to encourage them, or it could be calling 911 when someone passes out. People can enrich this part of our lives too. We need each other. And the point is this. We need each other, and Solomon knows this. In fact, this world is full of hevel, unpredictability, difficulty, temporary. It's full of all of this, and yet community is one of the few things that Solomon does not call futile and a chasing after the wind. He doesn't follow this statement up with that, because it's not. Yes, people too will pass away, and people are temporary, and I know this is a crippling and hard reality, but the lesson is still valuable. That relationships under the sun can affect my relationship with the Lord. We need each other to do this life well. We were formed for fellowship under the sun, because fellowship under the sun leads to relationship with my Father. And so Solomon has one more bit of advice. Seems a little off pace from the rest of what we discussed, but he says, better is the poor but wise youth than an old but foolish king who no longer pays attention to warnings. Wisdom is more important than riches or fame. And then he proves it with this example. For he came from prison to be a king. Even though he was born poor in his kingdom, I saw all the living who move about under the sun follow a second youth who succeeds him. There is no limit to all those who were before him, yet those who came later will not rejoice in him. This too is futile in a pursuit of the wind. Fame is short-lived. Even if it lasted this guy's entire lifetime, it would not remain once he is gone. It is not worth living for the envy of others. It's not worth living for the envy of others. And that ties back to what he said at the beginning, that everything we do is tied to this envy, right? It doesn't have to be. It's not worth living for that envy of others. We were formed for fellowship under the sun. So let me ask the honest questions. And I'm going to put this on you, but I'm asking myself the same questions. How do you see other people? This is an honest question. Do you see them as competition? Do you see them as some unachievable standard that you will never meet? Do you look at them and say they're not worth the effort? Or do you see them as needed in your life? Do you see them as helpful? Do you see them as worth the effort, worth the risk? Yes, people are worth the risk, but there is a risk to them. Because you could be hurt, you could be betrayed, you could be left, and that is terrifying. So how do you see people? The moment that this life becomes about anything other than enjoying the gifts and blessings that God has given, such as relationships, friendships, marriage, when it becomes anything other than that, then we have settled for a life under the sun. God wants abundance for you and me, so why would we settle for less than that? And so for us, if we need each other, then how do we plug in? And I can only give you what I can give you, basically. That's what I'm going to say. I can only provide what I can provide. I want to first say social media is insufficient to be your full community. I love that, amen. Thank you. Guys, I don't love social media. I know it's a popular thing for my age, but it just stresses me out. I don't love it. I spend too much time if I have it on my phone, so I just leave it off. Facebook's my one because it connects us to Living Church, so I use Facebook, but... yes, it can connect people. So there is a tool to it, right? I find that I don't actually use that tool as much as I use anything else on it, and so that's why I don't love it. But it can connect us, but it will not grow your relationship with somebody. And so instead, let me give you what church can give. And that's I told you, I'm going to have to speak from my framework. We have small groups here. We have a women's Bible study that's doing incredible, and sorry men, that's not for you, but a women's Bible study, and those women love each other well, and I've only heard good things from it, and that meets on Mondays, in the evenings. We have a Bible study that Jen Woolridge is leading, and I hear she's doing an incredible job at 9:30 on Sunday mornings. Easy enough, just come a little bit early and connect in on that. Well, I just started one on Thursdays from 6 to 7 here at the church where we're going to go through James. But I told everyone this past Thursday that my heartbeat is that just as much as we read the word and hopefully it grows us, that we also spend that time in relationship, because that matters, that we would be connected to one another. I think in that connection, we actually honor the Lord the same. There's also things of serving teams. We have people that come out here and clean. We have people that do nursery or children's church. We have serving teams in so many different ways. And plugging into that is so helpful to us, but it also will plug you into the community of those that serve alongside you. Also, let me give you a revolutionary idea. What about accepting invitations to coffee or, I know this is crazy, giving them? You can actually offer somebody to go to coffee or lunch or just meet And I'm sure that community in that way is helpful. And I think both parties would see that in that way. But a lot of us, if we're being honest with ourselves, are very scared to initiate that. Because what if they don't like you and they don't want to spend that time with you, right? That's the thought that goes through many people's heads. But we can accept or give invitations to go meet with people. The essence of it is this: intentionally putting ourselves in the path of people. My spouse alone, your spouse alone, cannot be your whole community. There's just too much for them to fulfill within you that it's not their burden. I love having a couple guy friends. I scrounged whoever I had left from college or high school when I came back to Roanoke, and those guys are very important to my week if I can see them. Even if I can just message them or have a phone call with them. There's a guy in the Bahamas that I'm still calling a weekly because the relationship with him matters. He actually sees me and knows me even if he doesn't see me personally. We need others. We were made, we were formed for fellowship under the sun. We were made to live in a community because it's to be known and to know others. We need to be known and know others, even if it's a risk. And so I want to take a moment to pray. Message simple here, guys. Community, we were made for it, and we are, and God has a desire for us to participate in it. In John 13, I think it's verse 35. I'm sorry if I'm wrong by verse. I think it's verse 35. He says, "By this they will know that you are my disciples, by the way you love one another." Would you bow your heads and pray with me?